We're doing the Netivot Shalom on Parshat Behar. The subject is Velo Tonu Ishet Amito. You should not afflict your fellow man. And the Rebbe of Slanim writes, V'chitim kerum imkala amitecha okono miyad amitecha. As always, he begins by quoting a pasuk from the parsha. It says, when you make a sale to your fellow man, or a purchase from your fellow man, al tonu ish et achiv, do not afflict one another. So that's one pasuk. We go down a few more psukim in the parasha, v'la'alan k'tiv v'lo tonu ish et amito. The Torah reiterates the commandment. It repeats and says, do not afflict one another. Uverashi, so Rashi in his commentary on the spot, quotes a Torah's Kohanim. He quotes a Medrash on the spot. De'al tonu ayribonat mamon. The first prohibition that says don't afflict is talking about cheating someone monetarily. Velotonu, and when the Torah repeats and says, and don't afflict one another, that's talking about behona'at dvarim. That's talking about afflicting verbally. Shelo yitza'er et chavero. Rashi quotes, we have a biblical prohibition not to pain a fellow man, not to say something that's going to hurt their feelings. So that's Rashi on the spot. V'inei masechet tamid, when we look at tractate Tamid, Rebbe Omer, we have the quote. Rebbe says, Ezohi derech yishara sheyavor lo ha'adam. What's a straight path that a person should choose? V'yesh omrim yechazik be'emunah yetera. We have a quote, and then, we know the quote, then the Talmud says, and some say, one should hold on to an excessive faith. So Rebbe asks, what is the path a person should choose? And one of the quotes is, hold on to excessive faith. What does that mean? So Rashi explains, Yisa v'yiten be'im bnei adam be'emuna v'lo yane et abriyot. When he does transactions with people, so then he should do it with faith. He shouldn't hurt other people. So that's called doing business with excessive faith. So the commentaries already ask on Rashi's interpretation. Rebbe asked the question. Rebbe says, what's a path for life? And then the answer is, be careful to do business honestly. That's the answer for life. Ezoi derech yishara sheyavor lo ha'adam, shehakavana lederech miyuchedet shel midat chasidut sheyavor lo ha'adam. It would seem that Rebbe is searching for a path of piety that a person should choose for all of life. Kmo shepirsh Rashi, as Rashi explains, sheyesh harbe derechim yesharim shetzeich ha'adam livchor. There are many straight paths. There are many areas where you have to be honest. Ela shehasheila hi ma'o hadavar hamiyuchad sheyavor lo ha'adam. Rebbe was asking, well, tell me what's the unique thing in life I should choose. Obviously, in general, I have to be an honest person. So Rebbe's asking, okay, tell me what's the unique thing I should choose. And then the answer doesn't seem to fit the question. V'ilu inyan yisa v'yiten be'emunah, hare hu davar shemiyuchad mitzad halacha, v'en ze midat chasidut. The answer seems to tell us, go in accordance with the law. That doesn't seem to be too pious. So that's the first question he asks. Od ikshu al ma shemosif Rashi v'lo yane et abriyot. It gets worse because Rashi added a comment. Rashi says, be honest in your dealings. Don't afflict people. What was he adding? He says, be honest in your dealings. Doesn't that basically mean you can't afflict people? So we began with a quote that the Torah twice commands us in this week's parasha, don't afflict your fellow man. Rashi, on the spot, interprets the first time means don't be dishonest in your dealings, don't overcharge, don't underpay. And the second commandment is telling us not to hurt someone's feelings verbally. Then the Netivot Shalom quoted from Tractate Tamid, where Rebbe asks, okay, what's the path I should choose in life? And his answer seems to be pretty simple. He says, be honest in your dealings. So he asked, why is that the piety I should be seeking in life? And aside from that, Rashi added, and don't cheat people, don't hurt people's feelings. What's that? This all seems pretty simple. V'yesh dever ha'inyan al pi madita b'Torat Avot. So he says we can explain based on what it says in the work Torat Avot from the holy teacher of Kovrin. Emet ve'emuna chok v'lo yavor d'chol amidot tluyot lefi ha'et ve'atna'im. When we look at the different behaviors, at the different tendencies of humans, well, it depends on the time. It depends on the conditions. Yesh itim she'adam tzirich litneg b'midah zo, v'yesh itim she'tzirich le'chos b'midah acheret. There are times when a person should behave one way, and then there are times when you have to behave a different way. Sometimes you have to be ruthless. Sometimes you have to be kind. Sometimes you have to be soft. Sometimes you have to be tough. Ach bet amidot. But he writes, there are two traits. Emet ve'emunah em chok ve'lo yavor. These are two traits that are constant. They should never change. V'chol ha'itim tzich yudi lachzik mehem tamid. There are two traits that a person has to hold on to always. V'al pizah yesh leva'er. So what are those two traits? Emet ve'emunah. Truth and faithfulness. Emet ve'emuna, the Rebbe of Kovrin said, are two traits that have to be a constant in one's life. So he says, okay, now let's go back to that Gemara. Our sages said, yachzik be'emuna yeterah. They said, you want to choose a path in life? Choose excessive faith. What does that mean? Rashi says, be honest, be fair in your business dealings. So he's really referring to these two ideas. What does emet mean? Truth. Our sages say, there we have a verse. It says, a person who is dover emet bilvavo. Someone who is truthful in his heart. So the Talmud says, an example of that is Rav Safra. What's the example of Rav Safra? So Rashi explains, Rav Safra wanted to sell an item. He was in the middle of reading Shema, and someone came to purchase the item. So Rav Safra isn't about to talk to the potential buyer. He's reading Shema. The guy comes and says, I want to purchase that item. I'll give you this much money for it. Rav Safra doesn't say anything. He's in the middle of praying. He's in the middle of saying Shema. The guy figures, I must have offered a price that was too low. He's not even responding. So he says, hey, buddy, I understand you don't want that price. I'll give you more. And he raises the price. Rav Safra finishes Kriyas Shema, and he turns to the guy and says, okay, I'll give it to you at the original price. Because originally I was planning on selling it at that lower price. So our sages said a person should hold on to excessive faith. Why did they say excessive faith? Even though technically, halachically, Rav Safra could have just kept quiet and sold it for the higher price. He never bargained with the guy. He never said, I'm willing to sell it at this price. It's not like he put a price tag on the item and said, the price is 10 shekel. The guy walked in and said, hey, I'll give you 10. And then he says, okay, I'll give you 15. No. So, but Rav Safra knew in his heart that he would have sold it at 10. So that's excessive faith. There's no halachic obligation to do that. Yes?
Does excessive connote too much? As in, like, so much to the point where it's extraneous?
I think over here, excessive means it's beyond the call of duty. Yet it's admirable. So it's telling you, you're looking for piety in life, take the trait of honesty and try to be meticulous about it. The trait of honesty is something which most people falter in. It says that's where most people get caught. It's one of the areas where most people falter. So we're in the middle of the thought, but the way the Rebbe of Slonim is interpreting it is, if you want to choose an area where you're going to focus in order to become a pious person, this opinion in the Talmud is saying, focus on being excessively honest. Yes?
Wait,
just 1 second, sorry, Nahum.
When Rashi says beyond the sin, it's business, affairs. Are we talking about strictly monetary dealings interpersonal, or are we talking about maybe something that isn't so specific?
What do you mean?
Like when we're saying business affairs, could that also be honest in how he sets up his future plans for his family or for his children when they're ready to go off? Or are we talking about things that he does in his everyday life that might not necessarily be according to running a business or monetarily?
I'm not following.
Like, in other words, is it talking about purely like asakim, like business? Or is it talking about interpersonal relationships, like different ways, like you would set up your accounting for your house, for example, whether or not you're like the type of decisions that you make for your personal.
But where would honesty fall into that?
So, I think it's one and the same thing, but instead of just being in terms of like money, I think you could also say like, for example, Let's say you don't want to tell someone what you're doing at a specific time, and instead of like, you know, lying to them to make their feelings better or lying to them to whatever, you're like telling them something specifically about that you're not able to spend your time. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like my dad's not home. Instead of saying he can't come to the phone right now.
Exactly.
Right. So I think that would also fall under this, especially the way the Netivot Shalom is understanding it. And again, this is a very good habit to enter. And it's a habit, meaning just like lying is a habit, so too telling the truth is a habit. And once a person enters the habit of lying, so they will invariably lie, even where it's unnecessary. Everything gets embellished. And when a person gets into the habit of telling the truth, then they can actually become meticulous about telling the truth. So back to the Netivot Shalom, he says, that's the idea of Yechzik Be'emuna Yeteira. Even in areas where the halacha doesn't demand it, a person is holding himself to a higher standard of honesty. And here the idea is Dover Emet Bilvavo, that one is honest with his heart. What was I really thinking? What was my real intent? Am I living up to what I really meant? And as our sages taught on the verse, Im himatze timatze biyado hagneva. The verse describes a thief who's caught with the stolen object. So our sages say, Shiv'a ganavimim. There are seven types of thieves. We think stealing is a simple thing. You take an object that's not yours. Chazal said, no. There are seven types of thefts. Harishon, you know what the first type of theft is? She gonev dat habriot. He tricks people. How so? Hamsarhev bechavero lo'ocho ven b'libo likroto. You're walking out of shul, and you know your friend has to go home. His wife is waiting for him. And you know that last week she came storming down to shul and told him, the whole family can't keep waiting for you. You better be home on time next week. Enough of this. So he's walking out of shul and he's trying to make sure to be home on time. And you tell him, Charlie, why don't you come over for a cup of schnapps? Now you don't have a cup of schnapps to offer him. But you know he's not going to take you up on it. So you tell him, come on, shul ended early. Why don't you come by? You know he's not going to come. And you might not even have to give him what you've offered. Doesn't matter. You're offering it to make him feel like you would give it, when in fact, you're not really going to offer it to him. You don't really intend to give it to him. So that's called gonev dat habriot. An example of that would be, you walk out of your house, and your neighbor's coming up the walkway, and he says, boy, you came out to greet me? So you smile, and you say, come on, of course. Now wait a second, were you going out to greet him? Okay, gonev dat abriot. That's called stealing one's understanding. You're saying something, you're giving him an impression that's completely false. You're making him feel like you have a certain affection towards them, which you really don't. V'amarbelo betikrovet. You have a guy who wants to make his neighbor feel like he really loves him. So when his neighbor marries off his kid, he comes over and tells him, look, I know I'm a taxi driver, but I want to give you gifts. I'm giving you my taxi. So he brings him the keys to the car. So, of course, the neighbor's going to say, no way, buddy, that's your livelihood. I'm not taking that. You know he's going to refuse. And you know there's no way he's going to agree to it. But you give him this huge gift as though you really loved him when you have no intent to really give it to him. So what's the first thief that Chazal listed? Before stealing money, the first thief Chazal listed is he who tricks others with his words. Now the same is true in our service of Hashem, like the Chaim HaKadosh wrote. It says in the Ten Commandments, Lo tisa et shem Hashem Elokecha lashav. Don't take God's name in vain. So it's telling us, don't take God's name on yourself in vain. A person is often tempted to show levels of piety that he really doesn't have. It's tempting. I can get everyone to think I'm so great, I'm so holy. I'm getting blank stares as though I'm the only one that has this temptation. So for all you guys, yes, this temptation exists. I'll give you an example. You're on a date and you just finished eating. So you've been speaking about spiritual things and now you got a bench. So you wisp out a sitter and you start benching. Are you going to be slower and more meticulous about your benching, assuming this is a girl that values that? Are you going to be slower and more meticulous about your benching? Because, hey, I'm on a date. I'm on my best behavior, right?
Do that even if Rob's sitting across you.
Okay.
The girl, you know?
So we have this temptation. Many times in our lives, we have this temptation. Your friends haven't seen you in ages, and then they say, oh, you're in yeshiva. And now suddenly it's mincha time. So come, let's go daven mincha. Now, what type of mincha are you going to daven? It's one of the reasons I don't like davening in the machon. I feel like I have a hard time being honest. Am I saying the same Shmona Esrei I would say if I wasn't around people who knew me? Is this the way I would daven if I didn't feel like I was in a place where people every so often take a peek? So I don't want to even think about that. That's why I don't like davening here. I want to think about I'm talking to God. I don't want to think about the eyes that are taking a peek, looking, thinking. So maybe bigger people don't have to think about this, but little people like me, I'd rather not think about it. But it's a challenge for a person. So that's the idea that our Chaim HaKadosh says is alluded to in the verse when it says, don't take God's name in vain. So that's alluding to the idea, don't take God's name upon yourself. Don't publicize as though you're waving God's banner, and that's really a falsehood. Uriel, maybe we'll just pass up the mic.
My question is this. A lot of times, I feel like, you know, I'm only really davening here so because I feel like it's expected of me. I prefer to go somewhere that davens faster and gets... And the only reason I'm really doing it here is because, you know, it's expected of me. I want the rabbis to see me. So is that an example of this, of what we're talking about here?
It's a tough question. It's a tough question.
How do you avoid that kind of pressure? Because there's lots of pressure.
You're right. I would say that that's a big difference between someone in the GEAR program and the other program. Because in the GEAR program, a person feels like someone's looking over his shoulder. He has to prove himself. And that's an unhealthy pressure. Some people find they can overcome it. And if a person feels like it's weighing down on him too much, it's recommended to bring it up with Rav Dinkevich. Over the years, we've found different solutions for different people, depending on what was bothering them, because it's not good to feel like people are looking over one's shoulder. So no one wants to feel that way, and it's really not it's not conducive to true growth. True growth has to start from within. So it's I think it's even worse than what he's describing. I'm saying, because what he's describing is a certain realm where a person might, take a few seconds longer to read his Shema, to say his benching, to daven, to say his prayer. Here it's if a person feels that pressure, then that can really affect everything he's doing. And like I once said to a student here, he was a nervous type of person, and he felt like every move he was doing was being watched. So I said to him, we have to work something out with Rav Dinkevich, because what's going to happen the day after your giyur? So then one of two things can happen. You can suddenly feel like, I'm free! Now I can do everything because I want to do it, not because anyone's looking over my shoulder. But another thing can happen, and that is, I'm free! Now I can do whatever I want, period. So it's not healthy. You know, one of the things we strive for is that a person should be true to himself. Polonius, right? Shakespeare. And this, above all, to thine own self be true, right? So I went to high school. We studied Shakespeare. So I'm saying that's why it is, if a person feels that way, so then a person should really work with the system to try and find the solution. I agree with you. It can be a problem. I agree. In all honesty, I never had to go through this system. Maybe if I did, I'd feel the same way. I can imagine I might. I'm saying, I think a person who feels that way should definitely bring it up straight on with Rav Dinkevich. You know, and you could even say it that way. You want me to be true. You want me to be honest. Yet, I feel like I'm being watched. So, how do you want me to do this? I think you can be honest and straight and put it on the table. Yes?
I was just wondering, this is not directly related to the text, but to Uriah's question. What do you do if you're davening in the tzibur and you don't manage to finish a prayer in time? Well, the tzibur is already moving on to the next prayer. Should you interrupt your own prayer and move along with the tzibur?
Shmona Esrei or the rest of them?
The rest of them.
So that we'll discuss later tonight. It's not, there isn't one answer. It depends a little bit on where you're holding in prayer. So the Netivot Shalom is now going to dissect this. He says there are different levels here. Like Mehadrin and Mehadrin Mina Mehadrin. There's a guy who's cunning, who uses cunning in his speech. And then there's a guy who does it in his thought, in his behavior. And sometimes it's small nuances of lies. That's also a lie. And at the end of the day, Hashem is about truth. I have to tell you a phenomenal story. Eish HaTorah once had a Hesder program. And the Rosh Yeshiva of their Hesder program in Tel Aviv, his name is Rabbi Schwartz. And he teaches in a few institutions. He was once walking down the hallway in one of the schools he was principal in. And he sees a girl standing out in the hall. So, this is a 9th or 10th grader. Her hair is punk style. Part of it is colored, this color, that color, another color, with all kinds of interesting ornaments, and she's in the hallway. And he walks by, and we'll make up a name, we'll call her Sapir. He asks her, Sapir, why are you out in the hall? So she said, the teacher kicked me out. So he says, really? She says, yeah, that is the most boring class I have ever attended. And that teacher just keeps regurgitating the same ideas and the same facts, and it is a totally pointless class. So he looks her in the eye and he says, Sapir, I want you to know, you are an honest person. You are willing to speak your mind. That is a rarity on this planet. And I still expect to see great things from you. Other people will sit through a teacher saying the same thing over and over again, and they won't budge. And you're speaking your mind, so I want you to know, take that strength and develop it. I expect to see you in high places one day, because if a person's willing to be honest and straightforward and take things and say them the way they are, then that's a person who will also see the truth and can grow with the truth and ultimately teach the truth. So don't let go of your truth. You're 100% on the mark. And with that, he walked on. He told me the story as I was getting a ride with him one day, and he showed me a wedding invitation. He says to me, you see, this is Sapir's wedding invitation. She's marrying the top guy in one of the top yeshivas. That's where she went to from there. He said, you know, you tell a person you have a good point. But you're honest. That's great. Stick to that. So then you can grow. But if it's about the show, I want to show everyone I'm pious. Yeah, I can play along like everyone else. So then it's all a game. So at some point, it can remain a game. Your whole life can remain a game. So coming back to here, he says, what we have to remember is that lies distance us from God. Our sages said on the Pasuk, Midvar sheker tirchak. The words literally mean distance yourself from lies. But our sages teach, Dvar sheker tirchak. A lie distances the person himself from God. When we lie, we're actually taking a step away. And we have a whole class on this in the Jewish Home series. It's titled, Why Men Lie. So you'll ask me, but women lie too. Right, but that's not what the class is about. The class is about why men lie. You know why men lie? Because we want to maintain autonomy. Honey, why'd you come home late tonight? So if you're going to tell her, well, I got sidetracked and I was reading an article, and she's going to give you over the head and I thought we agreed and you're not interested in hearing her comments, and then she's going to say, you know, you never listen. So what do? You tell her you wouldn't believe the traffic that was on the highway today. You know, every day things go smoothly. Today, I was so intent on getting here on time, I knew how important it was to you, and you can't believe what traffic was there. So now, what have you accomplished? You think you've accomplished. She's not annoyed. What have you really accomplished? You basically said, I will not include you in this part of my life. I don't want to hear what you have to say about it, so I'm not going to share it with you. The simplest way to maintain control and autonomy is to lie. You don't know what happened. You're not there. Well, maybe I don't want you there. But you know what? It doesn't work that way. When I've created that barrier, so then I've basically started creating parts of my life which are separate. So I've created a barrier, and I've run away from a connection. Well, so you'll say, but I don't want that connection. I really don't want to hear her ranting and raving and telling me, you know, you promised, you always do this. Why do you do this? Why can't you just shut the computer? Didn't we agree? If you really cared, you'd be here. Right. But what you lost is more valuable. What you've lost by saying a lie is much more valuable. And I'm telling you, this comes up a million times in life. It's a huge temptation. And especially for men, because it's so easy. And because we're different, men and women, so we we cringe at the idea of the reaction to the truth. So it's easy. It's an easy out. Okay, we got to start passing the mic around here. Remind me your name?
Efraim.
Okay, you guys want to pass the mic to Efraim? Yeah.
Don't we say that in order to maintain Shandait, a little light is okay?
So, in that class, we discussed it at length, that it's true we have a concept that for Shlom Bayit, one is allowed to lie, but it's also true that once a person starts, very often he doesn't stop, and you can find a way to interpret everything as Shlom Bayit. You know, at the end of the day, you will see. I can give you so many examples off the cuff. Let's take a small example. You and your wife discover that you're expecting the first baby, right? You agree you're not telling anyone, right? And then you're talking to your parents, and you decide, you know what? I'm just gonna tell them. I can't not tell them. Come on, it's so exciting. They're gonna be grandparents. But you agreed, right? Now you can't tell her. You told them because she'd be upset. So now that's Shalom bias, right? You went to the store and you agreed you'd stick it within a certain budget. You would not overspend the budget. Now, what's going to be? There was a huge sale and you realize you can get the laptop you always wanted for 40% off. And you know you're going to call her. She's going to say no. But then again, you know that there are funds that you can access, like from your savings account, from the cash you keep hidden for a rainy day. She won't know about it. Now, what happens when she notices that new computer? So now you're already working out. It's Shalom Bayis, right? I'm just going to, if I tell her, she'll explode. So you understand how far this can go? The poor guy has a gambling habit. But if I tell her I'm at Las Vegas, it's not, you know, Shalom Bayis. You can imagine how far it goes. And now what's really happening, and we men, we don't notice as this is happening, is we are protecting ourselves. You're not going to tell me what to do. You're not going to control my life. In other words, I am not going to connect to you with all my life. I will maintain something to myself. Now, yes, us men really want that. But it part of what helps us grow in marriage is the idea that we're connected on all fronts. So for that, you have to come to the series. This is, you know, I mentioned it in passing. You're taking me down the whole road. This is a long topic. But I'm saying, yes, the concept exists. Mishanim mipnei shalom. The concept does exist. We have proofs to it from the Torah already. And nonetheless, I stress that it's very, very rare that it's in your interest to use that concept. It's very rare. Almost non-existent, and on the contrary, if you start, it's very hard to stop. Because anything that will annoy you, you'll try to find another way out. And that is what's called, in French, a liar. I'm saying it begins that way, right? Okay, you want to pass the mic to Nahum?
I just want to make a quick point that's exactly on the same thing that Chazal was saying about every time you're saying a lot, you're distancing yourself from Hashem. It seems like when you're saying a lot, you keep yourself autonomous, what you're doing is creating and increasing the distance between you and God.
Exactly, right. That was the point I was trying to make. That's why I connected the two. Right, exactly. Perfect. Okay. So the Netivot Shalom says a very nice thought on the verse. It says, Midvar Sheker Tirchak. So our sages say, Midvar Sheker, from the word of a lie, Tirchak. We would say it means distance yourself from the lie. And our sages say, from the lie, you will become distant from God. Tirchak. It will cause you to be distant. But it goes the other way too. When it comes to the truth, there are levels of truth. There are levels of honesty, and we all know it. Just like we know in kashrus, there's kosher, and there's mehadrin, and there's mehadrin mina mehadrin. There's truth, there's saying the truth, there's thinking the truth, and v'yesh mashe et atzmoi nom rameshu be'atzmoi yodeh et ha'emet. And then you have a person who can actually connect to the truth all the way. The higher a level of truth that a person attains, the closer he is to Hashem. And that, says the Nativot Shalom, is the idea that the Talmud was saying, you want to choose a path in life? Take hold of excessive faith. That means be excessively honest in your dealings, even in areas where you don't really have to give it back. But we're talking about being excessively honest. And that's why Rashi adds, v'lo ye'ane et abriot. Don't afflict people. Even in areas where it's not a lie. Even in areas where you could say, I'm doing what's fair, right? But it's hurtful to someone. Now, sometimes you'll say, but kosher people do this. It's still not true. It's still not the right path. What would be an example of this? Okay, I'll tell you an example that ticked someone off. I was on a date. Now, this came back to haunt me years later. I was on a date, and I didn't know what I was doing. Okay, it was one of the first girls I dated, and I was really new to this whole thing. You got to remember, I grew up in a fully Orthodox environment. I didn't know what a girl was. Like, I mean, I knew there were those pretty things on the side there, but not much more than that, okay? So we're coming to a date, and, okay, I'm starting conversation, and I didn't know how you're supposed to date in this country, so we went to this restaurant, and the waitress comes and asks us what we'd like. And after the waitress leaves, I don't remember if she commented to me or I commented to her, that the waitress seemed so tired. Who would work such a job? Could be she has to fund her schooling, and she seemed so out of it, like this was so hard for her to be on her feet and look at what she has to run back to the kitchen and back and forth. And I felt really guilty because here I was a guy in yeshiva. I never went to a restaurant in my life. Like, you know, I could count on one hand the number of times I went to a restaurant. And here I am making her work. On the other hand, it's her livelihood. Okay, fine. I half wished I could tell her, you sit down and I'll go get my cup of tea. But say there, I can't do that. Fine. So, okay. The tea comes, and the waitress forgot to bring a sugar for the girl. So the girl, or she brought one and the girl wanted two. So the girl smiles and says, you know, I asked for another sugar. And when she said that, I felt like, you know, we just said this poor girl has no kwa. Who cares if the tea has one more sugar or not? You're going to make her go all the way back to the kitchen and bring another sugar. So I didn't say anything. But I guess my face sort of gave it away. I wasn't too pleased. I felt like, you know, take my tea. What do you care? Like, is that what matters? It's an excuse for the date, right? So it came back to haunt me, because later on, this girl would say all kinds of nice things about me. He won't let you order sugar in your tea on a date. Like, you know, it really came back to haunt me. But I did not use that line. But coming back to here, so is it prohibited to ask for your tea, for your sugar? No, it's permitted. She's entitled. You know, you're paying for the tea, you're paying for the sugar. You're entitled to have sugar in your tea, no problem. But you see the other person, and you see that it's hard for them to go and do that extra mile. You know, you can say, well, she's working anyways. What's the difference if she's bringing me my tea or not? Fine. I can't say it's wrong. But there are levels. And that's what the Nativot Shalom says. There are levels within what's honest and fair. There are also levels of how much I care for the other person. והדרך הישרה היא שלא יענה את הבריאות, so the path, says the נתיבות שלום, is not to hurt someone else, even in areas where I'm right, I could ask for it. There's nothing wrong, I'm perfectly entitled to it. There's nothing wrong, I can ask for it. But I also know that it's going to hurt someone else. There's emet, there's truth, and then there's the essence of truth. And that is what the Talmud was referring to when the Talmud said the path a person should choose is a path of excessive honesty, excessive faithfulness. That's what the Talmud was referring to. So that's the first idea that we see here in the Netivot Shalom. The Torah says don't afflict your fellow man. The Netivot Shalom took that, developed it with the idea of not afflicting even where the truth is on my side. There are still areas where I could grow within that. And that's the idea of excessive truth that we saw from the Talmud in Tractate Tamid. Oh. Should we break now for 5 minutes?
Please.
Let's pause.